Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
I'm ready to blow it just one more sound.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on Facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbifn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome. It's Solutions Today. My name is Bill. I'm your host. And we're back, and we're ready to share everything we know here and everything you know, of course, whenever you want to. By the way, the call-in number, if you ever want to call in, is 424-243-9540. And I'm your host, and we're going to be in the topic. Last time I had, now these haven't been guest programs, and I will begin to start to line up with some guests. But these are things that I wanted to lay out over the last program, in which I mentioned the whole process of acquiring or having a TBI or some kind of brain injury, and the events that I faced. It was really almost autobiographical. So with that take, I thought we needed a follow-up to that, because that a lot of that was the discussion of how you deal with the injury itself. And after there's a period of time when you suffer from the injury, and you come to terms with some of the outcomes of it, and some of the symptoms and stuff, and you learn coping strategies on how to deal with it. Because some of the impulses you have related to the brain injury, because it's an organic injury, they never really go away. But what you learn to do, they do minimize to some extent. The intensity is not the same, probably because of your reaction to it or experience with it. And, you know, it's sort of like a politician when he's president, an executive. They have to kind of have a dichotomy in personality because they have so many issues to deal with. You know, they have the Defense Department, domestic affairs, foreign affairs, intelligence, military, all these major departments like they're the hub of. And they're the spoke, the hub of that. And so they have to begin to separate these things and prioritize them. And so they don't really mix up. They go from one to the other to the other. And so when you're suffering from an injury like I do and you still have these influences, what I learned to do, and this will be part of a review of my last program in which I stated this, and then go into once you solve some of the symptoms from brain injury, what do you do with it? But in this case, in order to function, like I would have extreme issues of feeling, you know, impulses of being frightened of things and not reading things correctly, misinterpreting people's what they said. It always sounded like it was viewed, I think the cleaning people were spying on me, or the landscapers at my complex at that time. And of course they weren't. And you know it even when you're thinking it. But the impulse is so strong. It's sort of like the brain is wired into the flight or fright part of the sympathetic nerve system, in which you're like an animal when it's in that system. If you ever see a cat when it's really, cat normally will let a sound go by, but if it's keyed up and they hear one little bump, they'll scatter because they're so keyed up. That's what it's like. It's the fight or fright system in which you become super sensitive, so therefore you think everything is like a threat and stuff. Or you misinterpret what people say. It sounds uglier than it really is. And so what I've learned to do, and now it's practice to me so much, and I do use prayer as part of it, but what I do is I put those feelings in a lockbox in my head, and I isolate them there and lock them up, and I often pray, because that helps you get rid of it and be able to separate that. And once you do that over a period of a few days, the rational arguments your intellect makes about why that's not true work out, and it totally dissipates and disappears. That's my experience, for the most part. And I do it almost automatically now. And so, therefore, I never react to things. So if I think those things, I used to react, I don't do that no more. I put it in a lockbox, and I just leave it. Best quote is Abraham Lincoln, when he was mad at somebody, would write a letter to them. In his day, that was a form of communication. And what he would do is he'd write a very mad letter, and his theory was never mail it, wait a day. And usually when he went back to it the next day and he'd be giving someone the dandiest time in terms of telling him how mad he was, by the next day he would settle down and he would never send a letter. That's the theory behind it. And so as you recover from injury, and then at that point, after, you know, you deal with the medications, you deal with some of the physical symptoms. Well, whatever your situation in terms of what you're going to do, whether you can work or not, you are a changed person, and you're going to have to, at that point, figure out how to function, because what you did in the past may not be what you can do now. And from my theory, like the philosophers in Greece used to say, I don't remember which one, but part of the theory of Greek in terms of happiness is using all of one's abilities that are God-given along the line of excellence. Now, that doesn't mean when it's God-given that therefore it's a gift that's not disciplined, or a gift that doesn't have to be worked. It very often does. And so then we have to deal with what we're going to do in terms of, and what I mean by that quote of the Greeks, using, what's the definition of happiness, is using all of your gifts in the striving for the lines of excellence. And what does that mean? That means you're using your creative processes, whatever you desire them to be or whatever you have a talent for. And post-injury, it's very often different than what you did prior. And you may even find you do different things. But that is the essence of what we have in life. And when we don't have those things, and we're not using our mind in some form of creative endeavor. Now, very often when we're working and we're striving to just earn a living and put food on the table for our families, that's basically our creative endeavor. Most people don't have the energy for nothing more. But as you recover from the brain injury, you have to recalibrate and gain those things. And you have to do it post, because one of the downsides of a brain injury is your essence has been essentially injured. And you can injure your arm, and it's really just a physical, it's just the flesh. But when you injure your brain, you're injuring the core of who you are. And when you do that, and now all of a sudden what you had in the past, and if you can't work anymore, your whole reason for creative endeavor sort of disappears. And maybe some of the things you used to be able to do easily, you can't. Very often you can, but sometimes you can. And so in order to gain confidence as a person, you must start to figure out ways that you're going to use creative. Now, this can be with great restrictions. In my particular case, I came out of the brain injury dealing with some of the issues. And one of the keys was I had extreme fatigue. I used to be able to work 70 hours and play and everything else and put on 7 hours sleep and be fine. As soon as I had the brain injury, I would get so fatigued when I first was injured that I could read an email and I would have to literally write a paragraph in an email or read an email and I would have to lay down. Conversations would tax me. Having a family get-together, I'd be wiped out for days. So in working with a neuropsychologist, I had to find ways within the context. She thought I had about 10 functioning high hours a week. In reality, I thought I maybe had 20. That was our disagreement. We agreed on 15. And that means I have to balance between using that time and then resting in between and allowing myself to rest, and not overdoing it. And so in my particular case, I had to find things Now, this isn't everybody. Some people are wired differently, and their injury affects them differently. They have loads of energy. In my case, I would fizzle out. So I had to do things, and at the time, I was short money, so I had to work. I can only work one day a week, and I did that. Then when that was over, it was taking care of a man, and that was really my first accomplishment. But I did other things before that, like volunteered. I did some work with the TBI, Peer Visitor Program. I attended a support group in the VA and helped start it because at the time, after the Iraq War, they had no experience with TBI and all these soldiers was coming back. So those are the things I did proactively. And I was involved in support groups. Well, I'm not a support group person that's going to do that forever. So then I had to find things on my own. I did and earn a little extra money. At that time, I needed it. I needed to do things that were creative. And this is what you, as an individual new TBI person, in order to get that confidence about your being, you have to begin to establish post-injury those things you can do, and you do have to take baby steps, just the way you initially took baby steps in whatever career you had. You know, you didn't just go off and become a teacher right off the bat or a fireman or whatever it is you did. You had to learn and do it in a process. An NFL player wasn't a great player, excuse me, right away. It took him time to build up from when he was younger. So you have to learn how to pace yourself, find little volunteer things, little events to get you rolling and find what you like. Because in terms of life, we do have to learn to go out and grab it. If you don't want to, in order to gain that confidence in yourself, you have to begin to use your mind to gain confidence in yourself as a person and feel fulfilled in a job well done. So what you do is you find these volunteer things along the way. And with prayer, helping out, depending upon, excuse me, I got something caught in my throat. Depending upon what the, when you feel weak in these areas, as I felt weak when I had, say, heart surgery years ago, couple of years ago. Well, when you have those cracks, I personally depend on my faith in order to get me through that. And I always felt the same thing when I had certain symptoms. When I would lay down and put things in that lockbox, when I placed it in the lockbox and in God's hand, it would disappear. So I prayed to find things to do. And when I could not do them because I was mentally shaky, I would use the Lord. For instance, the man I took care of, I had to occasionally clean him. Well, I'm not Mr. Diaper Guy. I haven't had kids, so I'm not Mr. I'm not a great caregiver. And she hired me there because I could keep him company, but occasionally I had to take care of him. And the only way I could do it is to remind myself that Jesus cleaned me. The way I got the strength to do it. Excuse me. It's just something caught in my throat. I apologize to the audience. It's not that I was so grossed out and it was so antithetical to anything I'd done. And so I had to get through it. And I had to do it with another human being. And I'm trying to do, and I'm not skilled at this at all. And the way I did it is I said a prayer, and then I thought of Jesus, and I remembered that Jesus cleaned the feet of slaves. And in that moment, I thought about it, and I talked to God, and I realized, and I said, you would do it too, and I knew he would have. If it meant that he had to clean that old man, he just as well would have did that as cleaning the feet or washing the feet of slaves. So that's how, and once I did that, I was able to get through it. And so that you use, and I'm overly telling you that, but that doesn't mean you don't work at things. You just can't sit there and pray for everything and think everything's going to be solved. The ability of what you do through prayer often comes out in your own intellect, your own mind, and your own efforts. It works through that just as much as it works through something outside you giving it to you. And so the when you do these things and get these things and slowly begin to gain some level of function in volunteer stuff, then you can go to more advanced. In my particular case, what I did is, since I'm a tennis player, I went to, and this is, and remember, you're going to have to work with a therapist and work with others to find out what where your strengths post-injury lie. They may be very different in terms of what you had before, and you're going to have to search. But you have to do this in order to be viable. Even if you're on 100% disability, you still have to find that creative niche to make yourself feel worthwhile as a person, as a contributing member of society. And believe it or not, on disability, even in limited ways, and I've told you, I had a limited number of hours. And so most of the things I focused on, because I had that limited number of hours, you may not, but in a lot of cases, people with TBI, you learn to balance it. But I did things that did not require me to work a full-time job. For instance, and it turned out to be very fruitful for me in terms of my goals and changed me periodically. And one of the things I did was I discovered that I'm a tennis player. So once the man died, he ended up dying, the man that I took care of, and he invited me. He requested that I would be there at his dying bed. So I made enough of a connection with him that he wanted me there when he was going to go, because I may not have been the best caregiver in the world, but one thing I did give him his dignity, and he wanted me there when he was ready to go. And he left me a lot of money. He gave me a lot of money when he died, thousands and thousands of dollars. And so, and that was my biggest compliment. When he requested that I be there, and his wife did when he was in his last days, that to me was all I needed to do. And he was comfortable with me being there in that way. It just, and he was a macho guy. And so that was my big confidence builder first. So then the next thing I did, and I happened to end up picking creative things that were very good for the development of tennis. As a matter of fact, tennis playing, when I recovered from the brain injury, it was so bad when I was playing competition tennis when I had my accident. Post-injury, I was so uncoordinated, I'd see two balls, and I would bounce around the court and lose track of myself in the point. And I would literally felt like a rubber court. I'd end up landing on my behind as opposed to landing on my face. So I figured that was the best option. And so eventually rehabilitating by hitting the tennis ball, that part of my functioning into my brain, my balance, and then the sight came together and started working again just by hitting me. And me and the coach decided, what do I do? And he said, let's see which ball. So I hit the outside ball. It didn't work. I hit the inside ball, and apparently that ball will work. So when I was playing, I saw two balls coming, and I always hit the inside ball, and I could play the game. Anyway, so those things, and so what I decided to do when the man disappeared, in my case, since I could only do things incrementally in a small amount of time, I began to teach about 10 hours a month of tennis. And this was supplementing my income. I did need the money. I charged about $40 an hour, and I think I made, and I had about 8 or 9 students, and I was teaching about, maybe 5 hours a week. And I was making a little extra money. I charged 30, whatever. I was making like $400 or $500 a month. And so those are the kinds of things that I did. And after that, I did attempt a job. I told you in my last story, and it fell flat on my face because I couldn't do it. But what I did do is I did make sure to look for something else. By that time, as we headed into 2013, my financial position changed a little bit. My mom died, and I was eventually going to see some money from that estate. But at first I didn't. So what I did is I managed to, in 2012, I managed to buy a townhome under very good terms. And my mother, before she died, had given me about, I had about, when she died, I got like a small part of her. There was an account we got before the estate settled. because we were named beneficiaries, me and my sister. It was in a some kind of a, you know, a trade account or some kind of an insurance where they put money in and gets interest, and we split it before it was part of a beneficiary. So I got some money before the estate settled. So I took that money and I made sure to look for getting a house or a townhome. And I was actually looking for that last year of my mother's death. And I was prepared to have her be able to stay here, but that didn't turn out to be. I'm still sad about that. But and so I worked on making sure that I found a living condition where I can economically, with my limited income, afford where I lived. And then the estate eventually settled. And so I had, you know, within a few years, it was like 3 years afterwards, I think I bought the place, and a year later the estate settled. And so I bought a good smart, I used, what I did was, since I didn't have work anymore, I used the, instead of having a full-time job, I used the time I had to make sure I got the best deal price-wise and what it would be in terms of expanding my wealth later on in looking for a place. And it took me 6 months to find it. Drove real estate agents crazy. But I made sure to find such a good deal that I knew it would work out. And I followed that process in buying all my cars. And so essentially I was using the skills I learned when I ran small companies. I was using them in terms of increasing the bang for the buck I was getting off Social Security, whatever it was. I had to lower my expenses, increase my overall wealth, and increase economically I could keep my transportation. I did get a free car from the Brain Injury Trust Fund, and I essentially, from that point on, rolled that car into every car I had, where I really haven't spent money on cars, and I haven't really bought a car since the early 2000s when I bought a Subaru for $3,000. Since then, that's all I've spent, because every car I have, I got an accident because I had such good mileage, the insurance company paid, so I ended up, anyway, with the same, I got a better car, essentially, or equivalent. Anyway, so those things, I applied to that, and then once I got a certain amount of money from my mother's estate, I had a choice. Now, I lowered my expenses, so I really didn't need to work part-time. I pretty much, other than living a little bit over budget each month, meaning it eats your savings, I had a whole range of things. And so I looked at having this money about 7 years ago. And I had to make a decision. I could sit there and just pay off the mortgage, which was about $50,000 at that time. I already lowered it to a conventional loan, so I did do that. And so I had I probably had six figures. But I realized if I just sat there with this or just bought things and went on vacations, you know, $130,000 would just turn into nothing in the foreseeable future, especially since I was living where I was eating into savings a little bit each month, say $300 or $400. Well, that adds up. All of a sudden, you do that over a period of time, and you know, $100,000 can turn into $50,000 in 5, 6, 7 years. And so where would you be? So what I decided to do was, at that point, I spent tremendous amounts of time researching what I could invest in. And I looked at the time, I was looking for real estate deals. And I applied as much as I could in terms of every deal that in terms of buying houses. I made sure to look at every real estate deal I could, each one that I looked at, I would continually make sure that I would make sure that each one, I would make sure that each one was in process of what's the word? I would make sure that every house I looked at would have a good return. And then that's how I found my place. So once I had the money, I had to look at real estate first. And after about 6 or 7 months, I was ready to make a few deals. I could not see one which was really beneficial to me. And it just didn't look like a good deal. I could have spent maybe $60,000, $70,000 and another $50,000. If I sell this for a little bit of a profit, I'm going to do all this work. And maybe down the road when the market increases, I maybe make $20,000. It just did not look good. So then after a period of time, like I said, remember, I'm limited income, have a little bit of money. And then I looked at a stock that I started to do research on certain stocks and other things that I had an opportunity. About 4 months before, I saw an article. I'm a musician. Now I am. Later on, I picked up the guitar a few years later after this. But that's another story. That's another creative endeavor. But at this point, I had to look at what I had. And I looked at, I'm a fan of the Beatles. And at one point, I discovered, I think in spring of that year, that they were going to put these autographs up for auction. So I, at the time, when I began to, when the estate settled, I did all this research on these autographs. I searched everything. And so I finally discovered, and they had the auction in the fall of that year, and I bought as part of my investment these autographs that were turned out to be legitimate. They have some hair samples on some of the original fan club cards, and it's a scrapbook, and there's the signatures on there. And I did the research knowing that this, regardless of whether I was a fan or not, I knew this was a gold mine because eventually it would turn into money. I've since gotten offers for six figures for it. It could be worth much more than that as the years go by because it's just very unique. It's very historical. Anything attached to that particular historic figures in that era is worth a fortune. Anything, teeth, toilets, everything worth. Anything attached to them. Guitars are astronomically amount of money. And it will only continue. So it's actually a good investment. And so already, if I wanted to. So that was one. And then the final thing I discovered, and this is bad fruit over the last, it took me years for it to bear fruit. I started looking at the future economics of the world. And I looked at that we are turning, we're going to soon turn completely over at some point. It's already happening into electric cars. And I looked at all these car makers, and I looked at Tesla, which was very inflated, and realized I didn't want that. And then I did research in the last century to get an idea where I'd go with this. And I discovered that the last century, when they had the Industrial Revolution, and you had all these cars, car companies making all these cars. We only know of the final big three, or whatever they call them, the big four, Ford, General Motors, Chrysler, GM, as if they were the ones. No, there were ten of them. And the others might have survived. Some of them didn't. So as I was looking at this EV market, which I was looking to get into, I discovered, well, you know, maybe who knows what company is going to be more successful, who will have the better battery, who will have better promotions. It may be Tesla, maybe it'll be Ford. Who knows? So other people or other foreign companies. So you could pick and choose. You can't tell when a company is. So it's hard to figure because that can be, you know, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And that's what happened in the last century. And then I looked at, the last century, there was. Then I looked at what does the car need, and I discovered what they all needed universally and in other products too was lithium, because that's the only metal that can store battery at an electrical charges at an effective rate, and that's in tools and computers and not just electric cars. So since that was the technology, then I said, well, it's good to invest in lithium. To understand, to underscore that point, I went back again to the last century, and I looked at what would have been the best investment in the last century. And at that time, during the 1890s, at the dawn of the industrial revolution, 1880s, 1890s, there was an accountant that worked for a company and started an oil company. And he went around and he bought all this junk farmland that the farmers didn't want all over the state of Ohio, all out through the Northwest and the South. And they thought he was crazy. They had nicknames for him. And they'd line up and call him, oh, we got this land. He'd come over, and he'd pay off of them, whatever, pennies for the acreage of land. And he was so invested, he even took credit out in order to buy more shares of his company, which was just a penny stock initially. Well, he later got into where that company did provide kerosene and stuff. But the key was the Industrial Revolution and the automobile, because the residue of the kerosene and the manufacture of oil, the byproduct was this stuff that was very flammable. It turns out that stuff that was flammable was what the car makers now call gasoline, and used them, petro, for all the cars. That's why they called it petro. And this guy cornered the entire market with all this land, owning all these oil fields. And the name of the guy is John D. Rockefeller, and the name of the company is Standard Oil. By the time of the turn of this century into the early part, the 1900s, until the 1920s, By the time into the early part of the last century, he owned 90% of the U.S. economy. They had to break up Standard Oil because it was such a monopoly, and he had so much money. And so, and that, by the way, and that goes to the Rockefellers to this day. It's a perpetual inheritance estate. They still, all the heirs, hundreds of thousands of them, get all sorts of wills and get left an inheritance from that estate. That's how vast it is. And literally, they in New York, they literally owned entire blocks of New York they just gave away. That's now Rockefeller Center. There's a reason they call it that. It's because he owned it. And so that's the kind of wealth. So I looked at, now I'm not saying it's them, but then I looked at various stocks, and I picked a lithium company that had a mine in Nevada, which is near the Tesla factory. They merged with a company in Argentina, which is another lithium mud. And so what happened to me after, and this took 6 months worth of research. So by doing this, what I was doing to explain it and why it's garnered me, all I was looking to do was double my money. So I looked at initially maybe make, you know, I was thinking I could make a quarter of a million. Maybe I'll make a couple of hundred and increase my overall retirement. I could pay off my mortgage, which is very limited amount I owe my down home, which by this time has gone up in value. Well, since I bought it when it was nothing but dirt on the ground, it was a penny stock, like 9 cents and 12 cents a share, 13, 14, 21, 17, 34. That was what I bought it at back in 2013 and 14. And the way I did it, the reason why I could be so effective, like considering I do suffer from these limitations, is because I didn't have to do it like a full-time job, like the tennis, like the other aspects of my life. I pick things that I don't have to be creative in spurts, so I could do the research and then just put it down, and that's what I would do. So I found myself effective with the man because I only work one day a week. I was effective teaching tennis because it was incremental hours throughout the month, and I did the same thing with my real estate. I did the same thing with buying cars, and then I did the same thing with the Beatle autographs, and then I did the same thing when I bought this stock. Now the stock is on the precipice, I'll tell you the truth, from when it was changing at pennies, because now they're going to be producing lithium next year, and they're building in Nevada, and they already raised the money for it, and they're probably going to go in partners with one of the big three automakers, or Tesla, in a battery factory out there. And now it's trading at $25 a share. I have tens of thousands of shares. So my wealth is already near $1 million. I don't do this, say this to brag, but I say that because that's both. Now, I never cheated, and I always use God as my barometer and my mother because it's her money and my father's money, stepfather, and it's their money. So my eyes were always on them because I look at this as their money in a lot of ways, even the profit. To me, it comes springing from them. So I keep that in mind. And so I decided that once I achieved that, once I achieved what my short-range goals was, now that I was in this position, I made a few moves. So now what I have left in there, I can wait the next few years because the stock from at this point, from $500,000 or $700,000, is vacillating between that, will turn into multi-millions over the next 2 years or next year. Really, very, very shortly, probably in months, my estimation, because the place will be producing and the place will be producing lithium in Argentina and be making money. I say this because had I not taken the risk, and the way you de-risk something is not because everything is guaranteed. It's because you do the diligence in the research so much. So the way I'm telling you as people who maybe have limitations is you can do these kind of things too. I just happened to do it because I looked at the situation and decided if I did not do it, it would all dissipate into nothing. Now, once I particularly have this kind of money, now my goals are set for the future because I may be able to do things that are even more important, because once I'm set, and to my astonishment, one of the things that I've concluded, and I've told my family this, certainly myself, it's really not going to make a difference in terms of my overall life. I may buy a house because it's a better retaining investment, and I may want to take the money out of my townhome because the house will maintain its value longer, and it's also a nicer little thing to have. And maybe I'll have some rental properties or something just to maintain some better income flow. I won't need it because I'm not going to have a house payment. But beyond that, having all that cash does not change my life precipitously. Anything I want, I could buy now. And I don't really have the great desire for material things, except for some travel, which I'm going to do. But I even talk to people, what would I buy? What would I eat? More food? I have no great value. But where the money comes in is how you can then, therefore, at some point in my case, I'm hopeful to, because I mentioned as I was beginning back to the story, because I've used my efforts and my creative energies to accumulate money, as I've stated this, once that becomes done, and it shortly will, I'm just waiting on it, and I'm waiting for the right time to sell. Once I finish those few moves, I have to then, therefore, do what you may be doing in the beginning, just like I took care of the man. I'll have to find some other creative endeavor. Now, I've added a couple of others. One of them is this program. I have done this for well over a year, and I may have ideas to expand it further, maybe doing a few more of them. Certainly getting more radio stations for more listenership is all a possibility. But I also, during the time, my mother left me a guitar before she died. I didn't pick it up for years. It was sitting in my apartment, and when I moved here, it was still sitting here. And one day, I decided, just about 4 years ago, to take up the guitar. I had an ear operation. It corrected my hearing in my left ear, and then I decided to, I learned a few chords, and I think I could play a few chords. And it established me now where I'm writing songs all the time, and I play them in public, and I'm getting better and better and better. And I'm writing all these songs that I'm going to one day do a lot of stuff and play them here, some of them. I played one about Corona is one of my songs that I use as part of the intro here. And we'll give an update at the end of this. But what I do is, but I learned, and again, like tennis, for brain injury, music is the number one thing that exercises the brain. Listening to it does. Playing it and creating it amplifies brain function 100-fold. And I found I had a gift for song probably because I was in the sales career for so long, so I can write hooks. I have a gift for lyrics and creating melodies, and I'm getting better and better at the guitar and the singing, because once I do a song, I get out there and I play it. I guess I'm a bit of a ham. It takes nerve. I'm able to do that. So that's one of my other creative endeavors. So once I'm settled, I'm now looking for my future. I'm going to be searching, because very soon the effort to make earn a living like working or creating wealth will become a moot point for me. And other than doing some things for some people I love and some friends that need it, I'm going to then move on to live very comfortably, happily, modestly, but with comfort. And just be an ordinary, and I'm going to devoid myself from that kind of stuff and look more towards something in a nonprofit where I can contribute and use my creative jet. But what I'm saying to you folks out there who are searching, I started at such a minor level. I think the first thing I did was attend a support group. And the next thing I did was just go to another support group at the VA within a short order, like a year after, like a couple of years after my injury. That was my in total amount of giving back. Then I did peer visits to share with it. So what you need to do is once you take the baby steps, then I took care of the man, then I taught tennis. All of these were steps on using post-brain injury functioning in order to get keen on using your creative powers along the lines for this striving of excellence. You can't expect to be perfect. You may come short, but you're striving for excellence in each one of these things. And it requires discipline and a creative amount, and it makes you be able to, when you get up in the morning, you're doing something. In my case, as far as I'm concerned, I think I worked over the last 10 years because the reality is I did. I got up in the morning while other people were punching clocks. What was I doing? I was doing such research on a stock to the point where I could buy it at pennies and make myself a millionaire in a few years with God's grace and my mother's grace. They're always in my mind when I invest. And doing those things, I applied the same skills. I used the skills I had from employee. But essentially, that's the discipline you have to require when you don't have a boss or a punch. You have to just get up and have the discipline. And in my case, I learned to do it sporadically. Once I had strength and functioning, I'd go. Songwriting is the same thing. I don't do it 9 to 5, but I'm always working on it. There's a drive to always work on it. I have a song I plan on after I do something. I'm going to be working on it tomorrow and Saturday. I'm taking a tennis lesson tomorrow from a coach to improve my serve, and then I'm going to go out, and then I'm going to I have a few songs I have to knock off, because in my case, because of Corona, I can't sing in public with them, so I'm probably going to put them on a CD and get musicians and actually record this. I have a backload of songs. So for not to be egotistical, I share these things because this is my experience and how I've developed my creative thing. And I will tell you, you gain so much confidence in yourself and the ability to do things and manage yourself that it gave me strength. When I had those, when I was faced with a open heart surgery, and I off the tennis court, and I had to walk into a hospital because I was creating, I had so much water going into my system that I was going into heart failure. And I had to face that. Well, having all those disciplines and depending upon God gave me the ability to function with a big stressor that was thrown my way and deal with it with a bit of a plumb sense of humor and a bit of and looking at that risk and that thing without a lot of fear. So not only can I keep symptoms from the brain injury with fear, but I can keep even something where at the time I wasn't too sure if I was going to make it. And my only concern at the time was to make sure if it was my last days at that time, I was going to make sure anybody I had a disagreement with or if there was anything out there that was negative, I was going to make sure to settle it before. I didn't want to leave raw nerves out there, and so I decided to do that to make sure that that would be the case, because I didn't want to leave with things. So even people I had an argument with, I made peace with them, whether I was wrong or them wrong. I just let them know, as far as I'm concerned, it's over. And I just did that. And I've kind of followed that even through that since that. Anytime I have a disagreement, I find a way to just settle it and don't let it linger. It's kind of an offshoot of that. But what you need to do in establishing these things and searching, and this was my course, both for survival reasons, because it was my skill set, but I learned to be creative in those, in those small moments when I was being needed to be creative, which isn't like every day, and managed to maximize those hours enough where I could use that time and make it worthwhile. While other people were going to work, what was I doing? Spending my time doing research to make sure the Beatle autographs were legitimate, and took 6 months worth of time searching where the concert was, verifying names. Same thing with the stock. I know so much about the stock now, literally, and I've spoken to the people that are the head of the company. They know my name when I call them, because they know I've been in the stock since they were. And so, and by narrowing that risk, I was able to pick a stock. By the way, I've never bought autographs before. It was my first purchase of a house, and it was the first time I ever bought a stock in my life was this. It's the only one I've ever purchased. And I followed Warren Buffett, and he said it. Just buy one, do the research. If it's good, stick with it. And, of course, I stayed through it when it didn't go anywhere, and I waited. Now it's going to fruition. And I may be very rich. I don't know how rich, but it will likely be multi-millions, if not many multi-millions. And that's very likely, not like pie in the sky. Well, when you do those things, you gain such confidence in yourself post-injury that you're able to handle. So when I went into the hospital and I was faced with that, and I must admit, initially when the people are telling you all of a sudden, you know, you're in this state, one of the girls, I wrote a song about it, told me I was a deadline dot zero. They couldn't find a pulse on me. And they told me, there was one nurse that prayed over me for a while. She told me after I was out of the surgery. And I didn't know when I was laying there whether this was it. And so it's scary. Talk about worrying about, you know, the maintenance crew or some mundane problem of life. And so what I did was, that's where I went to a place, and I still have these dreams of when I went into surgery. I swear, goodness gracious, I felt like I was told that I needed to stay. And I remember, and that's where, in order to get through the strength of dealing with it, because you're initially very scared, it could be the end of your times, or even not the end of your times, the fact that you're going to go through this very, cutting your chest and having recovering from that operation is not a pleasant thought. Take my word for it. And you're doing these things, and as you're doing that and laying there, I did go into extreme prayer. And I prayed for what I wanted. And the one thing I remembered I wanted, as you're being taken care of by all these wonderful caregivers, nurses and doctors, these bright-eyed, bushy-tailed people. And I have family. And I did not want to, if it was my last day on earth, I didn't want to go out cowering in the corner. And if it wasn't my last day on earth, I know I needed to keep my cool about me and keep my sense enough so that I could make decisions that were for the best of my care and health and future success and future happiness and survival and prospering and starting to take care of myself. So all of the experience of these things led me to be able to handle that in a way that was comforting, and in a way that I didn't freak out, I didn't crack up. I will tell you, though, in all honesty, I held in the tears and the utter amount of whole emotional of me. Because in the room, I was the one that always made jokes I kind of followed Ronald Reagan and John F. Kennedy, and since I know history so well, and I know when both men who had, one was shot, they were both shot, but one was shot and survived, the other one went through all sorts of health issues. And I discovered in their writings about them that they were that during the time that they were in these health crises, both of them were very charming and humorful to the caregivers and doctors around them, to the point where people enjoyed their presence and enjoyed their, what is it? And so I followed that around my nurses and stuff, so that to this day, they all know who I am, because I was the one that was optimistic. I was the one that handled the pain. I was the one that took care of, never quivered or showed any great fear about it, was kept courage up, kept myself clean, managed to keep decorum, and I only got that full strength with the grace of God. And so that's a big element, because during the times you're searching for these new creative endeavors, it can be very terrifying. But if you get that underlying support, the anxiousness and fear you would be, like to this day, the fear of me not being able to get a chord right in my process of a song, or not being able to take care of the man correctly, or not being able to find something, or looking at my state financially and having the guidance and the will and the strength to go do the research on all those investments with a sense of confidence and cool. What it does is he fills in the mortar and the bricks that you have in your head in order to do that when you put yourself in his hands. Now, I do believe he gives a lot to those that try. So I always try to emphasize, you have to put in the effort to do so. And you only use that crutch or that lean on him only in when you put in the maximum effort, and I guarantee you he'll always fill in those parts. At least that was the case with me. And then you go through it, and you will find those things that you enjoy. And for those that are injured, it could be terrifying, like it was terrifying for me in the hospital, like it was terrifying at my first tennis lesson, like it was terrifying at my first thing. Well, when you have that strength of faith, he keeps those knees strong. I hearken back when I was in the hospital, because I was in the hospital in Kennesaw, Georgia. And one of the things about Kennesaw, which is down the road from me, is that it's a famous Civil War battle. And I remember sitting in the hospital. And at the time, I remembered, because I studied a lot of the Civil War. And I remember what the soldiers did. And I always... And here I am in Kennesaw Hospital, right near the battlefield of Kennesaw, which was a big Civil War battle. And I had the images in my head, like I always did, of those soldiers walking into the bullets. And I always used to remember as a kid and an adult, how did they do that? And I was inconceived. And when I was in that hospital facing that crucible point of having the surgery and whether it was going to be good, that's when I realized that's what it was. It was their faith that gave them the strength to do that. That's the difference. And when you have that, that's when facing reevaluating your brain functioning, having the confidence to be able to deal with the symptoms of it, using it for those things, that's when he comes. When functions are not working 100% correctly, when there are doubts about whether you can do anything because you're just brain injury, you've never done, when you don't know if you can even play a chord, let alone create a song, when those doubts are there, it gives you that bridge to be able to continue to use your abilities to go, to muddle through it, even through the doubts, where you come out the other end. In other words, it gives you support when you need it, as you're going through the process. And once you do that, you can face anything. And so that is how you do it. And when you do that, other than acknowledging where you get it from. And if I mentioned the Beatles, one of the key things you need to remember, I have a quote, I'll play it on the radio station one day. And since everyone knows they're so successful, I have a recording of both Lennon and McCartney, two of the Beatles, when they were at the peak of their fame. And they used to be very flippant with the press. They didn't take it seriously. They laughed them off, make sarcastic jokes, goof around. They didn't take any of it seriously. But once this guy said, I want a serious answer. What do you testify as the reason for your great success and your ability to do this? And Lennon, who was a very cynical kind of guy and wasn't the type to wear something on his sleeve, necessarily, actually said God, and McCartney agreed with him. That, in the peak of their moment, in their heads, that's what they believe. That, in a sense, though, when you gain your confidence in your ability, you do have confidence in your ability to follow through on the God's gifts, meaning they knew it came from God, but it didn't mean that they didn't work at it. And that's the same thing with me on the things I've mentioned, and it's the same thing that you'll find, that even though God is helping you, remember, he is giving you the gifts, and he's giving you the ability to choose to use your abilities and to work at that gift to make it successful. So in that way, you can give credit to both God and yourself and feel good about it. Anyway, it's interesting, and then we do have a few phone calls here. I'm going to take one since I've been talking so much. Maybe they have some quotes or some interesting tidbits on it, and I'm going to do that in a minute. And, hello? Hello, hello, audience, and my computer crashed, so the whole program, part of it was not there. I disappeared for a while. I'm sorry about that. Nothing I can do. I'm going to take a call now that I said my spiel. I don't know where it left off. Maybe they'll tell me, and so we can close out this program with a bit of a prayer and stuff. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Auntie?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air. I opened you up. You've been listening, so I got off the air. Did you notice?
Yes, I know.
My computer crashed.
A long time. Dead air.
Huh? How long?
Dead air for a long time.
My computer crashed. I didn't even realize it, and I had to reboot the thing. So, oh, well. Did you hear a lot of the program?
I heard some of it. A review of what you were doing, of what you had covered last time, talking about how you were able to recover and had to start from scratch, taking little steps at a time,
right,
gradually doing more and more, until you were able to overcome a lot of the obstacles of the brain injury, the paranoia,
mm-hmm.
and the fits of rage, because you started to come up with coping skills.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and did you hear the last part about it where I talked about some of the creative things I've done and what I'm trying to get other people to do, how important that is? Did it end? Yeah. Did I get close to that part?
Yeah, you did talk about the guitar, picking up the guitar that you had left untouched for years, a gift from your mom. You hadn't used it before. And you started a little at a time and eventually got into the songwriting as well.
Right. And you're a testimonial. These are all post-injury efforts. And did I talk about my investments and stuff like that?
Yes. And are you hoping to use those things in the future to maybe come to the nonprofit? Something that can be helping to others rather than just spending it on yourself because you feel like you don't really need a lot of stuff. You have no desire for a lot of stuff.
No. I may make a decision to sell this place and buy a house, maybe do some investments in some rental properties, but that's just a strategic move. But, yeah, because actually part of it is a simple reason. You know why? When you calculate it, it's so much money, what could you possibly spend it on? Seriously. It's like stupid. And also, I mean, truly, it's even now. I mean, I may have a tennis club, but I've already done that. I could do that now. I've done it before. I have all the things that give me joy. And so the more important thing of life is not the, I used an analogy as I talked about the songwriting and actually the investment is that, the end result is I managed. My goal was to make myself comfortable and secure. I've achieved that. And the only thing the money will give me will be the ability to add other creative things, like my guitar playing, like the radio program. Hopefully people benefit from this. I may expand it. But once I eliminate the urge to work and make money, because I've achieved where I'm not going to have to consider that, then you have to replace it with something that is, in a sense, using your efforts for a higher being and doing something that gives back to this crazy world in some volunteer work or a nonprofit. I don't know exactly what it is. You have, because the imbalance of a life that's just lived with comfort, with no, is a really empty life. And once you eliminate the need, because think about it, most of the efforts, you always did volunteer work, you always gave of yourself, even when you were struggling. But when you're struggling to make a living and making sure you have enough money for your retirement, for all of this, that takes away a lot of your creative energy. And so once that's eliminated, then you can think of more higher functioning things and do things. But the key is, and I'm trying to stress this to the TBI world and the audience, well, the way I try to present this program, I'm using myself as an example because that's what I know, is that you still have to find the creative outlet because the essence of using, God gives us certain gifts, and I quoted Lennon and McCartney, at the peak of their fame, when they were asked what they attributed their phenomenal success and their ability to do what they did, and they both, and Lennon, who is not one to brag about stuff like this, or would put on airs unnecessarily, and they used to be very sarcastic in their answers to the press about stuff like this. They'd give the most ridiculous, you know, it's because I wanted to have a lot of shoes, or something stupid. And so he said, what do you testify to that? And he said, God. And McCartney went along with it, says, I concur with that. And for the English, what people here don't understand, where we often express it very overtly, the tradition in English culture, as a rule, is to be very understated about religious beliefs in God. And there's a very good reason for it. You know why? Most of the churches in England were underground for centuries. And there was a reason for that. Because if you practice your religion and the king happened not to like it, do you know what they would do to you? Hello?
Well, it was against...
Chop your head off. So English churches, by habit, are always these low-key... It became part of the culture that you did... It's not that it isn't practiced there or the beliefs aren't there. It's that they don't make a big fuss about it because, think about it, part of the reason why the United States was founded was for religious freedom because it was so devoid there. Because the history of England is if you were on the wrong side of the king's particular religion, you would have your head chopped off or you'd be drawn and quartered. So guess what? Traditionally, they kept it very undercover. And so there's this very, the English do not have very demonstrative thing, but it's still there. And the fact that those two guys said that at that point in their life, right through the whole, psychedelic era, the fact that they would make that statement so definitively that's the reason. And so for my audience, as I've been encouraging them in my efforts, I don't know if you caught the 15 minutes where I was talking to dead air because I was not on the air. It was about 15 minutes where I was talking, but I wasn't connecting. And I wanted to emphasize to my audience that my beliefs in God helped me through these, finding these creative endeavors, including the stock, including the Beatle autographs, which I told my audience about, including taking care of the man, including getting through the heart surgery, including teaching tennis, because as I went into these things, I had tremendous doubts, and you're still not fully functioning in your head, so you use God as a way. And so what I told my audience is, so you continue to give, like the Beatles did, God as credit for your talent, but that doesn't mean that you can't give yourself credit for using God's help, using the influence to work at it yourself and put some effort into it. You can give yourself and acknowledge that you did that, and you can still apply yourself. And so it's something I taught to Eden about when she was not going through the stick-to-itiveness, and I explained to her the song I wrote. I showed Faith, wrote up this little song. My favorite song that I wrote was about Savannah. And I showed Eden the work we did over Thanksgiving. And it was a hodgepodge. And I try to explain to her that, by the way, that was the God-given inspiration. But it took me 2 months of solid work to work the chords out, work the rhythm out, work the lyrics out. And so the Beatles did the same thing. It's not that they didn't put it. So I try to tell my audience, you give God credit, but at the same time, as you're working these new creative endeavors under the context of your newly functioning brain, you also give yourself credit and you can feel satisfaction in your efforts in using God's help. Because it's sort of like a teamwork when you're doing it. Because very often, God lays the answers into your prayers on achieving something you don't think you can do, and it's with your own sweat and toil that it's actually achieved. Does that make sense? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, you're using the talent he gives you. If you don't use it, it becomes stagnant.
Or it just goes away. You did nothing with it, right? You understand? Look,
right.
We could talk about the Beatles of the yardstick. They had God-given ability.
Yeah, that's like
the
parable of the talents in the Bible.
What'd you say?
No, one of them was given one talent, and told to do something with it. Of course, the talent was money. Another was given 5, another was given 10. And when the master came back to see what they did with their talents, the one who was given 10 said, "Oh, I took it and I invested it, and now I have this much to give you." And he said, "Well done." And then the one who gave 5 said, "Well, you gave me 5. I went and I invested it, and now I have this to give you." And he said, "Well done." The one who got 1 said, "Oh, I just went ahead and buried it because I knew that you were a fearful man, and I was afraid I didn't do anything with it." And so the master was displeased with it and took what he had given him, and he gave it to the one who had invested it and used it.
Right. That's what it is. It's sort of like, yes. And remember, I'm trying to point out to all the audience here is that, and the essence of this program is how you can develop creative things, because we can talk about money. And since I have it, it still doesn't replace. The only thing the money will give me is maybe more opportunity to do some creative things that I wouldn't otherwise have. That's a fact. Just like the other than that. But you know what? If I didn't have the money, I'd still be looking for something else to do. It doesn't really matter. The only thing that money gives is I literally could maybe use some of the seed money to start a nonprofit or whatever. There might be some doors open that otherwise wouldn't be open, but it still will require faith, and it will require, what's the word, it will require work and using, because the essence of happiness is, by the Greeks, is a quote, is using all of God's gifts that's bestowed upon you in the toil and effort towards excellence. In other words, doing the best you can in your creative endeavors towards the best you can towards excellence, which is what you're trying to do in things. And that's the definition of happiness. And the truth is, the way people gain confidence post-injury is through all these efforts. And there's no different to me than any one of the efforts. To me, they're all the same. And one of the reasons why I felt good in them is I used them. And I use God to get through some of the harder aspects. Do you remember me talking about that? So that it got, the way I got through the old man is, I remember I couldn't clean. The only way I could do it was I realized Jesus cleaned the feet of slaves, which means as I was entering that bathroom to help that old man clean himself, which I hated doing to this day, I thought of God, and I realized in talking to God, if Jesus was here and this is what had to be done, he would have done it just as much as cleaning the feet. And that gave me the strength to get through it. And he knew that's what I was asking him for. And he gave me the strength to do that. And I did it well, and I did it efficiently, and I never, and by the way, he was smelly before. Once I said that prayer, guess what? I never smelled another thing. And that unpleasantness, it doesn't sound much from you because you changed diapers. For me, it was the horror. And so those things, in each one of the little creative endeavors, my faith helped me get through those things. And so what I'm trying to tell the people that have, that, and some of the audience, may be just coming to terms with the brain injury, and they're going to have to take these recalibrated brains, which may have some of the skills they had before and may not. And they're going to have to find ways with the limitations. Remember, I had to do things sporadically. I can't do things like a full-time job. So every endeavor I took, including the stock, including the songwriting, including the tennis, including taking care of the old man, was stuff I could do sporadically, including this radio program. Because if I was required to do it 8 hours straight And then 8 hours straight, you know what would happen? I would collapse and be useless. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But yeah, and so the lesson, what I was trying to import with this particular program, and I unfortunately got blown off the air because my computer crashed, is that the people need to calibrate things that they are interested in. I just gave my life because I know it. And so the only thing I can speak honestly to is how I developed it and how I did it and now how it's bad fruit, because what I did was I thought I, in my heart now, even though I was on disability collecting a check for the last 10 years to 8 years, the reality is I got up every day and worked like anyone else does. The only difference between me and you, I didn't go into a change. I didn't go punch a time clock. But you know what I did sporadically? I worked on increasing my wealth. That's what I worked on. And then I later on took up guitar and stuff like that in this program. But initially, my goals was like that guy given by the master. My goals was to, I couldn't earn a living. So what I decided to do is I can increase my wealth. How can I do it? In order to do it, I got to work at it. And that's what I did. And so I look at this as sort of like, this is my paycheck. So it's like a paycheck. And so, look, you know, it's actually no different for me because in reality, a large portion of my working career was spent earning commissions. And so I look at it, it's like, oh, commissions, this is commissions, you know? This is commissions. But no. Now, to my audience, I don't think that you should take this is your path, because each one of us have our own given, God-given talents that we can use, and each one of us has our own abilities, our own levels, but each one of us, excuse me, do need to find that balance. Do you have anything to add, Andy? Anything you want to say?
Yeah. Well, I agree with you. I think that everybody has some sort of a talent, and it there's a whole gamut of what it can be. But if you just go ahead and sit and sit and resign yourself, and I'm speaking, of course, to people who have had a TBI or a post-traumatic stress or whatever, strokes or whatever. If you just resign yourself to that and don't make any attempt to overcome it, then I feel like you'll deteriorate. And so whatever it is, whatever the talent is that God gives you to do, do it to the best of your ability as if you're doing it for Him, not for other people, not for yourself. But in doing that, you're developing yourself into the person God meant you to be, and you will experience more fulfillment.
You know what's amazing? How scared people are that don't have faith in God.
They
really don't. They're in a state of terror. You hear it. As a matter of fact, we have people that we know, and you hear them. They say it. And they say they really don't, they're not into the God stuff. You know, they're not there. And they're the ones that are lost. And I explained, as a matter of fact, that part of the process, I did put it in there. The recovery was it was an important part. I described my hospital stay, and I do it again because I was off air, so I might as well do it. One of the keys was when I was in that hospital room, and I was didn't know if I was going to make it, and you know I had to figure out, and I remember I was in Kennesaw Hospital, and my audience didn't hear this, I'll repeat it. And I was laying there, and I remember what I did. That's after I contacted everyone, because one of the things I decided to do is if I didn't make it, I needed to make sure to reach out to people. Especially, really, it was to make sure that I settled any differences, just to bury the hatchet. You know, there's no ridiculous, including my sister, who had not communicated with me. She was in a state, so, but I had to do it. And but that was one thing. Then the next thing was I had to take care of my own reaction. And admittedly, when you're laying there and they tell you this is what's happening, it's a big shock to you. And at that point, I don't know, you know, what's the outcome. And even the positive outcome is I'm going to have, you know, 8-hour operation and my chest cut open. This is not going to be a fun situation here. And I could not make it. You know, who knows? And so at that point, and that's very frightening. Well, how do you get through that? And at the time, remember, I'm in Kennesaw, and I remember thinking all the memories I had of the soldiers that fought in that war on both sides. And they used to march right here, right in Georgia, right in that near Kennesaw. They used to march directly into each other, meaning they would face cannonade and bullets, and they'd just keep marching. They didn't break ranks, you know that. That was rare. And I always wondered how they could do that. And so I felt like when I was in that bed, I was facing that conclusion. And I remember thinking, since I'm contacting all my friends and family and all of these young people in the hospital trying to earnestly care for me, the last thing I was going to do is go out cowering in the corner. And if I gave in to that fear of that, if I survived, I wouldn't be able to be clear-headed enough to make decisions. So I asked for God for that strength. And that's how he's able to face it with courage and without fear, because he took away the fear. That's what he did. I'm telling you, that's what happened to me. It's like when I told the story about when I was crying over my grandmother and the pain was taken. Or like the old man where I didn't smell anything in the room when I went back to take care of him after talking to God and realizing I would do this as well as wash the feet of slaves. I basically knew he would. So when you do that, that's where you gain. And so the people that don't believe, they're just dependent upon themselves, and their knees buckle. My knees didn't buckle. Neither did those soldiers that marched into cannonade. That's how they were able to do that. It's the same thing. And so, and it's also, it kept my dignity and myself. And I think by doing that, you give yourself a better chance, and you're able to make cool decisions like a soldier who has to make calculated, strategic decision while bombs are flying around them. And they have to. And I think it's partly faith. No?
Yeah. I think definitely. I mean, maybe some of them were afraid, but they kept going. But
Of course they were afraid. But what God does
isn't the absence of fear. It's, what is it? It's you keep going despite any fear.
Right, exactly. Yes, I was still afraid. But God gives you the strength to keep going in spite of the fear. It's not that the brave man doesn't feel.
And really, when it comes down to it, people don't realize this. But every breath that we take comes from God. When we wake up in the morning, it's just as because God gave us another day. Most people don't realize that. They just I don't know what they think. They think it's just random chance that we're here or whatever, but they don't realize that everything that we have comes from God. It's all his anyway. And it's foolish to think that it's your own because, you know, you come into the world naked with nothing and you'll go out the way you can't take things with you. Everything we have here is a gift from God.
And
so you should be thankful too. That's another thing. Thankful, you know, thankful that we he gives us another day, and there's a reason why he gives us another day. Because as long as he gives us another day, there's a reason for us to be here. He has a purpose for us.
Yeah, and also in using your creative gifts that God gives you, I believe you can give yourself credit for putting in the effort, as I'm sure you do too. When you thank God for giving you the ability to do something, you also can give yourself credit, like you give a child credit for accomplishing something. There's nothing wrong with feeling good about making an accomplishment, as long as you do it knowing God helped you do that. But he does like those people, like that master who gave the guys the coins, the money. He was giving them credit for making sure he took that gift. Like God gives you credit for you putting in the work on the gift he gave you. Does that make sense? You understand? That's in a sense where you engage.
You know, the Bible says that God made man in his image and likeness. And God is the ultimate creator, the ultimate creative being in the universe. And we're made in his image and likeness. And when he made Adam and Eve, he gave them dominion over the earth. And he gave them responsibility to take care of this garden that he placed them in. And that's called stewardship. We all have stewardship of what he gives us. And he expects us to use those gifts.
And so therefore the closed brain injury, having faith and having God fill in the cracks where the injury has caused malfunction, he can do for you. But you're still required, like you said before, to do an effort into it. You can't just lay back and accept it. Or lay back and just drink your way out of it. Or lay back and drug your way out of it. Or lay back and just fall into a rut and say, woe is me, I'm not capable of anything. Because human beings, with God's help, are capable of many things still, post-injury. And that's where you can draw satisfaction, that you took the gifts God gave you and you used them. Does that make sense? And worked them and disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
And because, like that master did, the guy that just sat on it and didn't do anything, when he took away the thing and gave it to the guy that turned it into of some form of multiplied it. Right?
Right.
See the lesson? Right. So, yeah, and this, in the expression, God helps them that help themselves, it always sounds like a flippant expression. Except my belief is I always try to do everything I can to resolve issues that I have. Pains and everything. It's not that I use God only in the last resort, but in a sense, I try to max out whatever my capability, and I tend to turn to God when I've exhausted myself. And that's how I work it. I tend to exhaust it. And because I believe very often God gives it within our, gives the abilities within ourselves to solve it. We just don't know it. So he works through us. So you may think you can't do something, like my audience here, post-injury, may not think they can do something, but they might be able to achieve enough of that something to bring fruition to God's gift, one of the things that bugged me that Mark never did is that he never caught it. It bugs me because there's this woman in the group that has a speech problem. And he messed it up because he wouldn't let me get to the concept. And he always trapped me into a one-upmanship. And what I wanted to do for his group, I wanted to show them how they could use music to improve their brain function and their vocal ability. And unfortunately, he always put it in where me singing a good song, and he never let me bring it to fruition. So this girl that he adores in the group, who I literally wanted to show how to do a song, but the key was it did not have to be. And I happened to use a Beatles song as an example to practice for her, which I use. Only because it's not the greatest Beatles song in the world, but I still use it today. It's a very good song to practice vocal exercises, and in this sense, musical exercises. And I wanted him to do it, but he got caught up into making it good and making it a performance when the point of it was to just get them to use those things and use the Beatles as a barometer, not necessarily figuring out how to sing as good of them or as good as me. And I was explaining, and she just passed it off, oh, you're good. But the point was I was trying to make her that in order for her to be better, both functioning in the brain and her vocal, was not to achieve the ultimate success, was one, to do something musically, which would have brain function, but also would help her vocals if she practiced. You know what song I use?
No.
Magical Mystery Tour.
Oh.
You know why? It's truly a template of Beatle harmonization, and it's a great practice tool to practice how to sing. Think about it. It's all it is a lot of roll up, roll up, roll up, and then they're just doing da, da. You know, it's almost like a template for practicing various vocal exercises in harmonies and stuff like that to a kind of rhythmic, upbeat, pop beat. But in essence, it's really just a vocal range if you listen to it. That's what it sounds like, right? And so, but the reason why it's good for vocal exercises is it's good to practice all those notes. You hear all the notes you practice? Right? You, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I never thought of it.
Yeah, and so you never thought of it?
No.
Listen to the song. And listen to it's really a prime example of their vocal harmonization in a studio environment. Because they're practicing you can hear all the voices in there. You hear Lennon, you hear McCartney. It's a vocal potapaya or kaleidoscope of random vocal. Yeah, it's And they hit all and right, and so, but it's great practice. And in essence, what was missed on his group, which would have been perfect for them, was not to make it good. I wasn't trying to make it good. I was just using them as a barometer, like I do when I'm driving in my car. I use that particular song to practice some of the high notes and stuff like that. You just sing along to it. It's an exercise. And so, and I use other songs too, but some of them, some of other people. But what he missed in efforts, and what's important for my audience to know, is you have to practice these things, and it doesn't matter when you do your creative, and you don't have to be the best. You don't have to play tennis like Roger Federer to be in your creative. That support group didn't have to sing my Beatles song either as good as me or as good as them. But the process of them doing it will, one, improve their brain function and improve their vocal function. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Remember, the definition of happiness is using all your God-given abilities or your God-given abilities with all your effort striving for excellence. That doesn't mean you necessarily achieve being the best or excellent, and it doesn't have to be in order for you to feel satisfied. I don't have to in order to enjoy tennis. I'm not going to play like Roger Federer, but I will play good tennis at my efforts or whatever it is. Same way with guitar. Except I do think I'm a great songwriter. Anyway.
Are you still on the air?
Yes, and we're going to close this very soon. And I think, did we make good points for my audience, you think, with this?
Yes, I think so. I hope it's been an encouragement to them because...
Yes.
That's the whole point of it.
Yes, yes.
Encourage them not to give up.
No, to gain a little faith and not give up and remember that it's the excellence, it's striving for your efforts and your start stick. That doing the best you can is not a shame that you're not the best in the world. It's only a shame you didn't try and do your best. And
right.
If you do that enough, you're eventually going to reach some sort of success for yourself. And certainly in God's eyes. And it's been fun talking to you, Andy.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry that your computer went
dead
too loud, but you got back on, so.
Yeah, I did, and I closed the program. Look, I handled the catastrophe. I was nervous. I was talking into a dead microphone. It was funny, but... I'll talk to you soon, and stuff like that.
Okay.
I love you, Andy.
God bless you. I love you too, Bill.
And I'll sign off on the program on that. As this has been Solutions Today. Next month is Thanksgiving month, so maybe we'll do something on Thanksgiving. And I'm going to sign off. Like I said, it's Bill with... Solutions Today, and we'll speak to you next month and talk to you at another time. And make sure you get your booster shots and keep up with the protection we're getting through the corona, it looks like. So keep up the good work. Don't drop your guard and stay safe, and eventually it'll pass, and just make sure you get your booster shots and do all the future shots to keep yourself healthy. And I'll talk to you in November. Bill signing off. God bless, and have a wonderful day. And thank you so much. And I'm sorry we lost computer control for a period of time, but that's the way it goes. Have a good one. Talk to you next month. Bye.